This is White Owl from White Trash, Murphy's Law, Scarhead, all the fucking motherfucking bands in New York, giving you a shot and telling you you're listening to Dying Scene Radio.
And just like that, it's episode 26 of Dying Scene Radio. I'm your host, Bobby Pickles. My co-host, Bob Noxious, is off this week. He's getting his studio reorganized. However, it won't be just me bringing you all the latest music and headlines and punk rock world as reported by DyingScene.com. I did have a little help from my business associate over here, Tone Loki, this week. The two of us interviewed Dean, the frontman of the New York hardcore act, No Redeeming Social Value, who are sometimes referred to as the poor man's Murphy's Law. He actually said that. That was his quote. But anyway, while Bob is on his one-week hiatus, Tone Loki has been a tremendous help to me. And speaking of white trash...
Hey, Bobby.
you, Tony.
You, that would be you, Bobby.
We
you
did manage
Florida.
To bring in a guest host to help us out this week as well. Everybody say hello to Aaron Collins, a.k.a. White Owl, bassist for the New York... I'm going to call you Funk Punk...
That's a good way to describe it. I like that. Funk punk.
White trash. And you, Aaron, you're in a lot of different other things, though. You're in all kinds of different bands.
Yeah,
and
I'm a man of many projects, but White Trash is definitely my home base. You know, that's where I got my musical start, and that's where, you know, I made my bones as a youngster at. You know, I probably wouldn't have started playing with many of the punk hardcore bands that I ended up playing with if it wasn't for my time and the little notoriety I got from playing with White Trash. But I've always been a punk guy at heart, and I've always been a kind of DIY, do-it-yourself dude. So I think that's why I kind of connect well with the punk and the hardcore scene, you know?
Absolutely. White Trash was a funk rock band, big in the 90s. You guys had a video on MTV, right? I labeled you guys a funk punk act. I mean,
yeah.
How would you classify the music you guys put out?
I would say that's a perfect description. Funk punk, we had a little bit of R&B influence. We have a horn section called the Badass Brass that basically, you know, we all grew up in the same neighborhood in Queens together. We went to high school, most of us together. And that was kind of like a little, you know, besides being funk punk and, you know, a little bit more rock and roll probably than punk, we had these horn players. So that kind of gave us a little bit of a different sound, a different edge in like a band in like the 80s, 90s. You know, a lot of other bands came out after that that kind of infused that stuff that went on to much more success than we did, such as No Doubt. And, you know, we were kind of like a poor man's fishbone in a way. A lot of people would describe us as something like that, a white boy fishbone. But, you know, that's probably where we lie closest to. We got labeled with the hair metal category, but we were really, our sound was never really like that. We kind of got lumped into that scene, unfortunately. I don't think any of us really wanted to be, but that's where we kind of got lumped into.
I love the WT New York Mets logo. That's pretty awesome.
That is pretty awesome.
Thank you. I believe that was designed by our singer, Dave Alvin. And as you can see, we're all from Queens. We're all Mets fans. I'm rocking my Mets gear right now, if you can see. But, you know, keeping it real, and this is the closest we got to a playoff push in about, like, 20 years. So, you know, actually a little excited about the Mets these days for the first time in a while.
This guy, he's a diehard Yankees fan.
I know.
Every night he watches the Yankees.
By the way, I gotta say, if I'm not mistaken, it looks like Loki shaved his mohawk off, no?
Yes, I did.
Yeah. You know what? I just brought my back a little bit. I was gonna say, I think we're the two guys with the most busted mohawks in punk rock and hardcore.
Yes. But mine's coming back, don't worry.
Yeah, me
might
too.
Even have it for the barbecue.
I just brought mine back. Me too. There's a couple of things coming up. I figured let me bring it back. Even though I get ragged on it by everybody in the punk rock scene.
Fuck him.
Loki basically breaks it out during wintertime.
Yeah.
He is
winter
a great... You can attest to this, right? White Owl, like, what kind of ridiculous mohawk do you put on your head?
It's basically a Mr. T mohawk with a minor variation on it.
He does, like, the Road Warrior or whatever.
Road Warrior animal.
Yeah.
It's
pretty awesome.
I think I'm one of the few fans of it, I must say. You know, I kind of rock something like that myself. Sometimes it just gets out of hand, but I have to admit, like, I'm just happy to grow hair where I could grow hair these days. So it's more about that than anything else.
Yeah. So, hey, man, tell me about the name White Owl. I have a nom de plume, man. I go by Bobby Pickles. Robert Piccirillo, I go by Bobby Pickles.
Not bad about it.
My co-host, Bob Noxious, this guy, Tone Loki. What about White Owl? Tell me about that. How'd you get that name?
White Owl came back, you know, basically when I started doing my alter ego hip-hop extravaganza, which, you know, even going back to the days of White Trash, I kind of grew up a fan of metal, punk, and hip-hop, like really all music in general. Like, I listened to everything. So, but, you know, I was always a hip-hop fan, like back in, you know, kind of grew up on it in the mid-80s to late 80s. But when hip-hop was more hip-hop than it is nowadays, that name just came from the cigars, the blunts, the pot-smoking blunts.
Speaking of which...
Perfect timing. If I knew we were going to, you know, be equipped like that, I would have got my shit ready.
Oh, you're not prepared?
I can be in a matter of seconds, but I don't know how far you want me to get away from the mic right now. I'll keep it chill right now. I've smoked enough for like five lifetimes, so I'm good. But
it's legal over here out in Connecticut, and I know that you're out in Queens, so it's not exactly...
I'm actually in Brooklyn these days. I'm from Queens originally, but I'm in Brooklyn these days. But yeah, you know what? It should be legal everywhere, that's for sure.
Whereabouts in Brooklyn? Whereabouts? I used to live in Crown Heights.
I'm in Brighton Beach at the moment. I've lived in Sunset.
All the way down there.
Yeah, I'm on like the tip of Brooklyn, south part of Brooklyn.
Sunset Park?
Russian neighborhood.
Sunset Park is when I first moved out of Queens. I lived in Sunset Park for about 6 years. And
don't you mean Gunset?
Yeah, Gunset Sparks. Yeah. Where the Gunset Sparks from the building and parks and the Apollos under the Gowanus are hiding hookers and narcs.
Yeah, so you've put out a lot of different musical variations and genres. But you played bass in a lot of bands, man, including White Trash, Scarhead, Murphy's Law, too, right?
Absolutely. I'm actually going to be filling in a couple of upcoming shows. One, which is like pretty much an honor for me to do, it's August 12th, Barry Electric. It's Jimmy's 50th birthday. And for me, when he asked me to do that, it was an honor for me to do it. It's a pleasure for me to be there to represent. You know, he's a hardcore punk rock icon, and he's a brother and a friend of mine, so I love him to death. I believe I'm playing the Punk Rock Barbecue on the 22nd also with them, which should be a blast.
And we're going to be there, yeah, right?
Yes, we are going to be there.
That's right.
That's great to hear. I believe No Redeeming Social Value is also playing, which I just found out. I'm glad to hear about that. I love those guys. And yeah, so that should be a blast. And the days with Scarhead, I filled in a show back in, I guess, April in Jersey. There was a thing called the Toxic Fest. But Ezak is doing more Crown of Thorns stuff these days and his new band Wilding Incident. So I don't think he's doing as much Scarhead stuff, but, I'm always, I guess, an extended member of the family, and Ezak is probably the one I give most credit for bringing me into the hardcore punk rock scene in the first place. We met playing basketball out in Queens in, like, the early 90s, and next thing you knew, I was playing in a band with him a couple of years later.
Man, what's DMS?
Well, that's a very broad-based question, but I could tell you what it means to me. To me, it is a group of friends that kind of grew up playing music together and formed a natural bond because of the punk rock hardcore scene and music scene in general. And we all kind of rocked together. I was in the mix mostly diehard in like the early 90s, like mid 90s, I would say. And to me, they're all brothers, great friends, love the guys to death. I'm a little bit more out of the mix these days, but you know, I'm a big supporter of all the bands involved and more importantly, all the people involved. It's just a great group of dudes and they're all brothers and family to me. So,
what does it stand for?
There's many, many interpretations. Drugs, music, sex is one of them. Doc Martin Skins, Doc Martin Stomp is another one. Demonstrating My Style, which Madball made famous on the records. But you know what? Whatever acronym you put to it, it's more about a brotherhood of musical friends and people that have lived and died on the music scene and kind of lifers on the music scene that pick each other up when times are down and... to me, it's a brotherhood.
Sounds good, man. How about some news? You're going to be with us all night long. We're going to report the news, and we're going to play some music here. And, we're going to bring everybody along and tell everybody what's been happening in the punk rock world over the last week. So we have plenty of time to discuss stuff.
Sounds great, man.
2 weeks ago, Bob and I spoke with former Sum 41 guitarist Dave Brownsound Batch. And this week, we find Brownsound in the news. So from White Owl to Brownsound. How about that, huh?
Nice segue.
Anyway, nearly a decade after parting ways with the band, guitarist Dave Brownsound Batch is officially rejoining Sum 41. I don't think Sum 41 is part of DMS.
No.
But the news broke last weekend when Batch joined the band on stage at the Alternative Press Music Awards to play a handful of the classics, including In Too Deep and Fat Lip. shortly after he confirmed that it wasn't just a one-off performance and he would be rejoining the band full-time, posting the following to his Instagram page. Yes, yes, y'all, I'm back at Sum 41. Thanks to all the crew, band, and fans for making me feel so welcome. Thanks at Blink Someday 41 for the rad shot. I feel so thankful. Hashtag Sum 41. Hashtag scumfucks. Hashtag APMAS. Hashtag family. To watch the band's full APMAS performance, you can check out the video on dyingscene.com. Daryl McDaniels, a.k.a. DMC, there's another acronym, also joined the band for some Run DMC covers, but I'm pretty certain that was a one-off performance. But then, after all that, the band was asked via their Facebook page if Bach had actually rejoined Sum 41 on a permanent basis and will appear on their long-awaited new album. The response was that all options are open right now, and there's no yes or no answer to that. So maybe it was the scumfucks hashtag on the Instagram post that made the band start reconsidering Brown Sound's permanent involvement. What say you, White Owl? What are your thoughts on original lineups getting back together, man?
Well, I'm always a fan of seeing an original lineup of any group that I'm interested in, I'm a fan of. Ideally, to me, that kind of hits home a lot because White Trash is basically one of the things that has me back doing it. It's mostly all the original members involved with it, which is kind of ironic except for my brother. My brother was the original guitar player, and he's not involved with this. So to me, it's something that personally... you know, I can attest to, like, you know, I love being a part of and seeing other bands with the original lineups. Although there's a few bands that I must say make it happen with different members. And for the most part, I would say mostly not. But there's a handful that do. Fishbone, I'm a big fan of the group Fishbone. And that's one of the ones that sticks out to me. It's only a couple of original members, but they still put on a great live show, kick ass. Jimmy Murphy's Law is another one. He's the only original member of the band. He's had about 10,000 members coming in ahead of the band since the mid-80s, but, you know, he's another one. It's, you know, basically you come to see Jimmy put on a show, and as long as the music holds up behind it, it's pretty much worth the price of admission, you know?
Absolutely. You know, we can go on and on about that. I mean, I just saw Screeching Weasel over the weekend. Man, Ben Weasel is the only member. It's usually like that. It's like one guy who's like the driving force and vision behind it. And
yeah, no doubt.
Life happens and people leave, and you got to keep the dream going, man. So.
Yeah, no doubt about it. You know, it's funny that you bring that up because that's exactly where I'm at with the band White Trash. You know, we just put out our first album in about like 5 years. Band was broken up for over 10 years. We've been on a crazy musical journey. We all went to like high school together. I've been playing in the band since I was 15 years old. So it goes back a long way. You know, it's about 30 years of my life now. So
let's get into a little music here, man. This is usually Bob's job, but I'll give it a whirl.
No doubt.
This is a track up the brand spanking new White Trash album entitled Suburban Purgatory. You can find it on Reverb Nation. And where else can you find the new record?
Well, that's right, another good question. The physical copies and the downloads will be available sometime next week. And we had a little stall with the mastering process. So physical copies and downloads next week on two places. One place is whitetrashuniverse.com. That's basically the home base for everything White Trash. You can link up to our Facebook page, pretty much anything White Trash, prior videos, prior albums. And then my website, my personal production company, which kind of encompasses everything musical I do, from White Trash to Butterbrain to, like, you know, even like Scarhead stuff. So all that stuff also will be available on GothamGoldMusic.com.
Well, this is White Trash with their new track, I Might Lie, on Dying Scene Radio.
Fletcher from Pennywise. You're listening to Dying Scene Radio. Stay tuned for all the greatest, latest vinyl hits.
Melodic Punk's Misconduct, who have just released a new music video for that track right there, Blood on My Hands, featuring Roger Murray of Agnostic Front. You can check it out on DyingScene.com. The song is a sixth single off their September 2013 album of the same name, Blood on Our Hands. So the track isn't exactly new, but the video is. And since Mr. Murray was featured in the song and video, and since he's such a staple in the New York hardcore community, I decided to include it on the playlist this week. So, yo, White Owl, have you ever worked with any of those guys at Agnostic Front?
Not directly, but good friends of them and all the guys. Great, great group of guys. Actually, that's not true. Yeah, I played with Pokey for a while in Murphy's Law. Pokey, who's the current drummer of Agnostic Front. And on some early Scarhead stuff on the Kings of Crime record, Roger Murray did some guest vocals on a couple of the Scarhead songs, but that's about as far as it goes. We weren't in the same room at the same time, but nothing but respect for those guys there, you know. Great guys and, you know, punk rock lifers. Love the band.
Well, yeah, and another staple act of the New York hardcore community is Murphy's Law. You're just bringing up that you played Murphy's Law. Bring me up to the speed with your involvement in that outfit, man, in Murphy's Law.
Well, basically, I was in the band, a permanent member from, I would say, like 98 to about 2001, somewhere around there. And I actually did some playing and writing for the Party's Over record, which is the last full-length record that they put out, I believe. The last, like, actual LP, whatever you want to call it, that they put out. Although you don't see my face on the cover. I had left the band before the actual CD came out. But basically, I've been an admirer of the band since I was a kid. And when White Trash broke up in the mid-90s, early 90s, I played with Scarred for a little bit. And Murphy's Law is probably a little more musically, like, up my alley, bass playing wise, and kind of where I musically fit more. So at some point we just connected, and you know, Jimmy asked me to join the band, and I played with the band for 3 years. As you said earlier, sometimes, you know, it's time to move on and move in different directions, and I was at a different point in my life at that time. But you know, I've always kind of kept the door open. If he's ever in a pickle and he needs a guy to play bass, I'm always ready to drop anything and fill in to play with the band. I love playing with the band. you know, it's one of the best live acts you could ever be part of. And like I said, I've kept that door open. And for the last 4 or 5 years, I've done a bunch of fill-in stuff. We did a Japan tour in November of 2014. That was like the longest stint I did for a while with him. And then I filled in a few shows.
I saw some of that. I think you had the live video online, right?
No, I think I just saw that recently. That was from a few years before. That's a great video shot, too. It's from playing like a big stadium or something like that.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
We were playing small-ass clubs and no big stadiums. I actually prefer that. But although it would have been fun to play a giant venue here and there. Yeah, that wasn't me. Different guy.
Awesome, man. Let me do a little bit of news.
Sure.
Blink-182 bassist Mark Hoppus has apparently confirmed that Matt Skiba from Alkaline Trio is an official member of the band, replacing their original guitarist, singer Tom DeLonge, who left the band last January. There does not seem to be much more information right now, but according to Hoppus, the new lineup will be entering the studio next month to record some new material. Blink-182 last self-released an EP entitled Dogs Eating Dogs in December 2012 after parting ways with Interscope Records. Their later studio album, Neighborhoods, was released back in 2011. So there you go right there. That's another case of somebody moving on. And those guys were together forever, the three of them. And yeah. One's gone. And now they're bringing in a new guy from Alkaline Trio. And now they're going to record. So yeah.
And Travis is DMS. Is he not, Aaron?
Who is that, Travis?
Travis Barker from Blink.
Yeah, I don't think he's an official member of DMS. I would have to say no, but he's a friend and acquaintance.
He's not a friend of ours. But he's an associate.
You know what? I've kind of been like disassociated from the scene for a minute. So maybe he is and I don't know. But as far as I don't know. But you know what? He's done a lot for a lot of the artists. Specifically, Ezak can help with like some Danny Diablo stuff. And I believe Tim from Rancid put out a bunch of Ezak's Danny Diablo stuff through Hellcat Records years back. So there's a definite connection and link there with those dudes. And I was skeptical of the music when I first started listening, just, you know, because it was so hip and popular, I guess you could say. But I think Rancid is an amazing group. I'm a fan of Rancid. And even the Transplant stuff. And Travis Barker gets hated on a little bit, too, but I'm a fan of all his stuff, too. I forgot the reggae thing he did with that dude. White Wolf, maybe the dude's name was. I forget. He had a little reggae compilation. But, yeah, those dudes are lifers. They put out great stuff, and they don't stop putting out stuff. So I have nothing but respect for all those cats.
Awesome, man. This last record that you just recorded, like Blink-182, the last record they did was self-released. So yes. They parted ways with Interscope Records. Do you have a label? Or, I mean, what do you think? Did you release this independently?
That's a very good question.
And what do labels even do for you these days, to be honest with you? Because you can do whatever you want with the internet.
That's a great question. That's pretty much where we're at. Basically, like, one of my big parts of the project is because I have a production company, we put out the last CD, which is called 3D Monkeys in Space. That was put out in 2009. And the there you go, 3D Monkeys in Space right there. And then the next one was Suburban Purgatory, which we're putting out. So basically, we put everything out through my production company, which is Gotham Gold Music. And the other guys in the group basically allow me to do that and support me doing that. And so, yeah, we're basically doing it DIY these days. Be honest with you, we're kind of learning on the fly. This whole last record, we did on our own. It took a long time to finish from start to end. Basically, we did it on our own music programs. You know, a bunch of the dudes in the group had Pro Tools or Logic. A few of the guys are in different states, so we actually like flew music back and forth. Literally, our drummer like rehearsed a few times, got the arrangements down, sent us drum tracks, which, because he's such a talented and awesome dude, you know, he's a little bit of a sound engineer also, and he's able to like mic his own sounds and send them out. So basically, he sent us drum files and said, here you go, do the rest, guys. We took it from there. Between him, our sax player, one of the guys in the band, sax player, ended up mixing the record. He also works in a jingle studio. The singer, Dave, compiled everything. He's got Logic at home, so he stayed on top of everything so we didn't lose files and all that shit. It was a mission. I actually, at times, was the naysayer. I was the dude that was kind of like, let's just fucking pay money, go to a studio, bang these songs out, and let's, you know, get fucking finished with this thing already. That's kind of how I like to operate. I like to, like, get in the moment, cut everything off for 2 weeks, and just grind it out and be done with it, and then, you know, have somebody mix it that we trust and pick a dude that we all agree on, all that kind of shit. But it didn't work out like that, and we did it basically on the cheap with a low budget. We're coming out of our own pockets for everything. So actually, Glenn from No Redeeming Social Value, who also is a sound engineer, the only thing we went outside of our little circle with was that we did some guitar tracks one weekend at Glenn's studio. So besides him, we pretty much did it on our own. It was took a lot longer than I would have liked, but I think the final product came out true to the sound of the band. Pretty happy with the way it turned out. So besides taking a little while, you know, we're happy with it. What we do now with it, we're not too sure. We're putting it out, you know, independently on my production company. Last time we did that, basically sold CDs like out of my apartment, just you know, went to the post office, took some orders online, and did it through PayPal and shit like that. And it's like a second job in a way, but it's for me, it's fun. I like being involved like that. I like doing it ourselves.
You bring up an interesting point, though, that you're talking about the money involved with making these things. I just want to mention another news story talking about Social Distortion. Frontman Mike Ness, he recently spoke with AZ Central about the status of their long-awaited follow-up to 2011's Hard Times and Nursery Rhymes, and I mentioned that he wants Rick Rubin to produce it because of his production on Tom Petty's 1994 album Wildflowers. So he says, actually, the production value on that Wildflowers record is just amazing. It's such a broad spectrum of sounds and tones. Obviously, that was still in the era of analog. I did that on the last record, but it cost me three times as much to record it analog. But since then, I have worked with people who have showed me that you can use Pro Tools and still achieve a pretty accurate thing. But you have to be careful. It's a slippery slope. So that's what he says. So, I mean, what do you think about that?
I was a longtime supporter of analog. I'm, I guess, an old school guy. And back in the days when White Trash was a young band, we were signed to Elektra Records. We had a big budget. We had it recorded in like big, well-known studios, analog style. You know, that's how the only way it was done back then. And even up to the last Murphy's Law record, The Party's Over, that was recorded analog. And that was in an era where everybody was switching to Pro Tools. So Jimmy, which I respect, you know, kept it old school, kept it, you know, punk, and said, "Nah, we're going to record to tape," which, you know, not a lot of people do nowadays. It was also a label involved, so it was a little different. We didn't have that option anymore. But I tend to believe, you know, I'm not a sound engineer, but, you know, I've done a lot of production, and I think I have a decent ear for that kind of stuff. And I would say, man, like nowadays, you know, you could really capture that same vibe on Pro Tools. Or, you know, I don't really work with Logic that much besides like what the other guys did with this record. But I think, you know, it's more about how creative you get with it yourself. Like, what sounds can you bring in? And, you know, nowadays it's all about like the plugins with these recordings. You can simulate a lot of this stuff. Some of the shit sounds simulated. It doesn't sound the same. And some of it, if you manipulate it the right way, it can. Or you could find a new kind of organic sound through Pro Tools. So
there's good and there's bad.
There's good and there's bad for both, I would say. I'm kind of turning to the new revolution. I would say I'm losing the die hard. Like, it's got to be done analog. Everything's got to be old school. Like, especially after doing this recording this way with White Trash, I would say that I'm much more open to the world of recording in Pro Tools and doing it digitally, you know?
Yeah. So, but anyway, in the news, Oi Group, Oxley's Midnight Runners, which consists of Lars Fredriksson of Rancid. You talked about Rancid before. Mike of the Fatskins, Dave of 90 Proof and Boot Party, and Jesus of the Warlords. Or that's Jesus. I got no fucking clue. But are currently in the studio recording the third EP, which will be released through Oi the Boat Records. We'll keep you updated as more details emerge. Do you like Oi, Aaron? What are your thoughts about Oi?
You know, I'm not really fit to comment on Oi. I didn't grow up listening
but
to
ska,
Oi.
But Ska, you like Ska. Ska,
yeah,
right?
I definitely do. And you know what? The Oi stuff I hear, I'm a fan of. But I didn't grow up with it. I don't know like artists like that. Ska artists I do know more about and listen to on a regular basis. But yeah, you play Ska Oi on a sunny day at the beach and this time of year and fucking crack a beer open and fucking smoke a doob. And, you know, how could life be wrong? So, yeah, I'm all for that.
That sounds like Jamaica, you know?
Yeah, man.
Or Florida, where I'm from. Florida, you know? Anyway, all right, well, we've got a ska song right here, and it doesn't suck at all, despite its name. It comes to you from the fine folks over at Open Ended Films and associated with Dang Records. They've just released a free digital version of A Fat Comp, a fan-made tribute to Fat Records. And it's available for download on DyingScene.com. It features covers by Armchair Martian, Much the Same, The Shell Corporation, Sick Waiting, The Sheds, DC Fallout, Car Bomb, and many more. A 12-inch double disc vinyl of the comp is available only as a perk for contributing to the A Fat Wreck Indiegogo, which ends on July 31st, and it will not be available for public sale. The track right here, off the comp, was originally performed by Propagandhi This is Big D and the Kids Table with Ska Sucks on Dying Scene Radio. Oi!
You don't believe me, you're a schmuck. But the trend will die out with any luck. Yo, yo.
Black list, hide our names. Holy war, holy war.
called New Abolition by Great Collapse. It's a punk band started by Strike Anywhere singer Thomas Burnett with members of Rise Against, Set Your Goals, and Comeback Kid. Can a supergroup get more stacked? The single comes off the band's debut full-length, Holy War, which is set to drop October 2nd. And to support it, they have also announced a European tour with Boy Sets Fire, Silverstein, Refused, Rise Against, Matt Davies, and Anti-Intellectual, just like Tone Loki, the dates of which can be found on DyingScene.com. In related news, Canadian hardcore punk veterans Comeback Kid and Long Island hardcore act Stray From The Path have announced plans to tour the U.S. and Canada this fall. Check out the list of dates and locations on Dying Scene. They'll be all over the North American continent with standout performances at the Orpheum in Tampa, Florida on October 13th and the Gramercy Theater in New York, New York on October 24th. So, anyway, hey, you were going to tell us a Rick Rubin story, is that right?
Yes.
Tell it away.
All right, there was a time, you know, back when White Trash was signed to a major label and, you know, we were signed to Elektra Records and we had a little buzz going on. So Rick Rubin was enlisted to possibly produce the White Trash album. So basically, we kind of fucked that all up, but we went out to dinner with him again. Like, you know, I was a teenager.
Wait, why was it all fucked up?
I'm going to tell you the story now. We had a dinner set up with him back in L.A. in Hollywood at the Rainbow Room, which was like, you know, still like a hot spot nowadays, but he was brought there to speak to us about maybe doing the recording. I think it was like in between. He had just finished doing a Slayer record and it was like about to do the Red Hot Chili Peppers Blood Sugar Sex Magic record. You know, he was like basically like, you know, a little cocky with it. He was kind of like, I think we were waiting there for about, you know, an hour or two before he got there. So we had started throwing down a couple of beers and next thing you know, we were kind of shit-faced by the time he got there. So he was kind of like, you know, what makes you guys special? Why should I produce you guys? You know, why should I not, you know, do one of these other bands? And our singer Dave at the time kind of was like, ah, you know what, go fuck yourself. And yes. You know, we were all drunk, like, yeah, fuck this guy. You know, we're probably one of our many career suicides that we did back. You know, we were young kids. We were fucking like beer drinking, pot smoking, you know, wild little kids. And we were kind of like, fuck everybody. Like, we, you know, fuck the, you know, our management, fuck Elektra Records. Like, we'll be, you know, doing this for years. Little did we know that no one was really going to be paying us to do this, you know, like we were at the time. We had it good. We were cocky, bratty little kids. But basically, that's one of our many fuck-ups. We also fucked up a possible tour opening up for the Red Hot Chili Peppers by bad-mouthing Dweezil Zappa. We had an opening gig for Dweezil Zappa at the Cat Club. This is like, you know, right before our album was just about to come out or right after it came out. And it was a showcase, like, to see how the band would operate on tour, this and that. The band always sounded great. We always, you know, put on a great live performance, so that was never an issue. But like I said, we like to drink and kind of get shit-faced before we played. And Dave, our singer, managed to we were opening for Dweezil Zappa, and as soon as we got on stage, I think a couple of Dweezil Zappa fans, like, you know, were booing us, and like, you know, where's Dweezil? So we just went on a rant about how much Dweezil Zappa sucked, and he wasn't the guy that had any talent in the family, and the fans were throwing, like, it was like an old school, like, you know, bad movie. They were throwing tomatoes and fucking, you know, beers at us and shit. But and a lot of dudes in the band kind of like, you know, we ended up at the time breaking up from the singer Dave for a long time because they did do a lot of things that kind of shot the band in the
foot. Sabotage you guys.
Yeah, but I was, you know, we grew up together and, you know, he's my main, you know, co-collaborator on the New White Trash stuff. It's basically, you know, me and him that kind of wrote most of the material. I would say even back in those days, you know, I got a kick out of it. And it's kind of what made us who we were. And it kind of, you know, made a little name out of it from being like that. So, you know, you got to be yourself one way or the other. So if we did shoot ourselves in the foot with some shit like that, you know, fuck it. We always stay true to ourselves. So we could at least look in the mirror and say, like, hey, you know what? We never fucking bowed down to, like, our management or our record company or anything like that. Didn't really help our career as much, but, you know, we have our pride.
Well, check out some of this news right here. I think it has to do with this, actually. When it rains, it pours. It certainly pours for a band called The Slaves. This band, according to a series of posts on the band's Facebook page, they were recently kicked off the 2015 Vans Warped Tour. Actually, it has now been reported that they were voted off the tour due to allegedly bullying and sexual harassment of a female crew member and for dumping toxic sewage out of their tour bus. Not sure if that's literal or metaphorical,
yeah, exactly.
But I guess it could be both. Word on the street is this band has also been dumped by their agent and they have been dumped by their tour they were planning to embark on this coming fall. Oh, and somewhere along the line, guitar player Alex Lyman got stabbed. Oddly enough. But listen,
sounds like an eventful week for those guys.
it was just an interesting thing. We were just talking about all this self-sabotage stuff that was going on. But listen,
that's the extreme. Yeah, yeah. I guess I shouldn't complain. I don't have it that bad. These guys were talking about self-sabotage. Jesus. We had a guy on the Murphy's Law tour in Europe, like back in, I'd say like 99, 2000, whose job it was, well, it wasn't his only job, but one of his many duties, don't mind the pun, was to clean out the fucking shitter on the tour bus. We had a little crapper that we brought with us. It wasn't even like a tour bus. It was like a little, it's like a bread truck. We were touring in like some fucking like bread truck type thing, a European bread truck, but looked like a UPS thing or something. But, we had like a portable toilet, basically. And this poor guy, man, the roadie we brought with us, guy's name is Surfer Dave. Surfer Dave, if you're out there, I wish you the best. I haven't seen in about 20 years, but that guy had to literally dump our shit every night.
Oh shit!
Oh, so you can't just go and dump it in the middle of?
I think you can, but you're not supposed to. I don't know. I bowed out of any kind of shit duties or shit patrol. So whatever he dumped it, I don't know. My lips are sealed on where the shit was dumped.
Let me do one more news story and then we'll get back into some music. Legendary UK punks The Addicts have announced a run of US tour dates that will take place this fall. Check out the full list of dates and locations on Dying Scene. A couple Northeast standout shows, because selfishly, that's what I'm concerned with. September 17th, Stage 48 in New York, New York. September 18th, Toad's Place out in New Haven, Connecticut, which isn't that far from us, Loki, right?
Not at all.
And then September 19th, The Chance in Poughkeepsie, New York.
Ah, great venue. Brings back memories. Hey, Al.
Agree.
Were you at the Sub-Zero show years ago when Lou DiBella did the backflip off the balcony there?
No, but I've heard about it. I've heard about that night.
He's a great dude, but he's a crazy bastard.
Yeah, definitely. I love Lou. He collaborated on some of the White Owl hip-hop stuff. He did a song with me and Richie Scam, Scam Dust, called Bad Habits, and he's got the rawest verse. I mean, like, old dirty bastard, none of these motherfuckers. Like, he's got the fucking down and dirtiest hip-hop verse I've ever heard, and, I love the dude. Yeah, nothing but good things to say about Lou DiBella.
Oh, yeah. Lou and I go back, 25 years to high school. Yeah.
They went to the same high school together.
Oh, did you guys? Really?
Yeah.
I got nothing but love for the dude. He's... another lifer. I know he's, you know, does everything from performing to putting on shows in the area. I know we've done a few, like, Scarhead shows. I think maybe Murphy's Law also, where he's been the guy putting on the show. Like, yeah, nothing but love for the dude. He's a crazy bastard. Had some crazy drunken times with the dude.
Yes.
And, he's like an old school Italian, you know, guinea drunk. Gotta love the guy.
Oh, yeah. 100%.
Oh, that he's sounds fucking shit great, man. Life. Dude, let's backflip into some new music here, man. This is Brazilian melodic hardcore act Atomic Winter. They're streaming a new track off their upcoming album, Tales of Survival. This is Concrete Squall on Dying Scene Radio.
Kenny from Lab Boys. Listen to Dying Scene Radio. Eat the booty like groceries.
Now you're lying on the floor, wishing that you had one more. At the party, at the docks, let these streets, they suck their cocks. Make a change, broke as fuck, got no beat, it really sucks.
Beer, beer, fun, fun, I have beer, I have fun. Beer, beer, fun, fun, when I have beer, I have fun. Beer, beer, fun, fun, when I have beer, I have fun. Beer, beer, fun, fun, when I have beer, we all have fun.
Fun, fun, I have beer, I have fun. Beer, beer, fun, fun, I have beer, wheel of fun.
Right now I have coffee.
Me too, right now I have coffee as well. Or is it beer?
Are we having fun yet?
Not yet.
Not yet.
Give it about 2 minutes.
Let me know when that part starts.
We're interviewing D Thrilla, frontman of No Redeeming Social Value, Long Island hardcore band. Would you guys say that you're a shtick band?
Yeah, we've been called the poor man's Murphy's Law. Some people would take that as an insult. I think that's a compliment.
Hell yeah, man. Jimmy G, right?
Jimmy G.
That's right. That's right.
That's right. Do you do the beer,
Beer bath?
Beer baths.
What is that called?
The beer bath.
Do you bathe all of the people in the crowd with beer?
Oh, yeah. That happens at most of our shows, I would say.
Oh, hell yeah, man.
Don't forget the chicken.
Yeah, you better wear a raincoat when you come to see us.
Now, tell me a little bit about you guys. Bring us up to speed. Bring our listeners up to speed. Tell me about No Redeeming Social Value and the whole shtick of it and stuff. My partner right here, he just mentioned a chicken. Bring me up to speed on all that stuff.
Up to speed. We're going to go pretty quick because it's been 25 years for us. So I'll tell you this. We started in Queens, New York. A bunch of knucklehead kids getting together, trying to play some music, stuff that we like. And, haven't stopped. Always up to something, whether it's writing songs or just hanging out, having some beers with the fellas, always out there trying to do something, make music, be creative, you know, things like that. That's really where it's just a creative outlet. That's what it is, and that's what we try to keep it as, and we try to have fun with it if we can, you know.
What's the deal with the chicken?
He's one of our mascots. We have a song called Chicken, and he's like our guy. You know, like some people have a song called Godzilla. They might have Godzilla come out if you were Blue Oyster Cult. We don't have that. We have a song called Chicken, so he's our chicken.
That's great, man. And by the way, I meant no disrespect. You have a Wikipedia page. You guys are legit. You've been together for 25 years, like you said. And I actually was introduced to you, though, by Tone Loki right over here. He's a big fan. He was like,
"Yeah, I've seen you many times." New Year's with Murphy's Law at Trash Bar.
Oh, yeah. We played that last New Year's Eve with those fellas over at the Trash Bar.
Great show. Great show, from what I remember.
Thank you. That was a lot of fun. Definitely a lot of fun. That was the last Trash Bar New Year's Eve show, so that's it for that place. But we were able to send it along in grand fashion.
Now, you guys are going to be playing a barbecue here soon with Murphy's Law. Is that right?
That's correct. It's a yearly event. They call it the Long Island Punk Rock Barbecue. A buddy of ours from Last Call Brawl sets it up. He's one of the promoters, and he asks us to play from time to time. And he likes to pair us up with Murphy's Law because, you know, he thinks that we're a good pair together, which I would say generally that's pretty true.
Yes.
So here we go again. 2015, going to do it again, you know. Barbecue up some chicken, hopefully, and throw it at the audience.
Notorious for that.
That's awesome, man. Dude, I'm looking forward to it. I'm going to go to it. And
cool.
I can't wait to see it in action. I can't wait to see the chicken and the beer flowing.
It's all going to be there for sure.
Man, New York hardcore. That is such a known acronym, NYHC, right? Throughout the history of punk rock and stuff. You'd be a part of that? I know you're on Long Island, but...
Yeah, know. I mean, I guess so. We're from Queens, New York. I mean, our drummer lives in Harlem. New York hardcore, NYHC, as it is known. The moniker, the legend. Are we a part of that? Yeah, I guess we are. You know, it's one of those things where we never started out to be part of any group or any society, anything like that. In fact, I guess if we're trying to do anything, it was to try to avoid that situation, try to just kind of go off and do our own thing or make our own music in our own way. But we're very fortunate to be able to have a scene to play to that's been, you know, pioneered by bands like Agnostic Front and Murphy's Law and all of our favorites that we were listening to when we were coming up and stuff. So, yeah, if we're a part of that, then that's great. You know, I mean, some people would probably argue that, but yeah, I mean, we certainly are a punk rock hardcore band from New York City for sure.
Awesome. So what do you have coming up? You got some new stuff coming up?
Yeah, always working on new material. We're trying to, we've been working pretty hard for about a year, year and a half now on some new material. We still get together once a week in the studio, have some beers, hang out for a few hours, bash out some tunes. And, you know, just by virtue of that, organically, songs are going to come out of that. And, you know, we don't really have a schedule. It's sort of we just do things when we feel like doing them or when we get around to doing them. And we do have a lot of new material that we're working on. I would say, you know, probably about 15 or so songs. What will come of that is anybody's guess. Like I say, we don't really ever have a plan for anything. I'm sure we'll eventually record those songs, and that's the plan, I guess, kind of down the road. And pretty excited about some of the new songs, and we enjoy playing them in the studio and stuff, and hopefully people will enjoy hearing them.
You're not saying anything out of school or anything like that. That's normal for any punk rock style band. It's always like, hey, whenever we get to it, we're working on stuff, you know, when we produce some stuff and we have some stuff to show. You'll have it.
Our plan is usually to have no plan. That's how we work best, you know? No pressure, no pressure.
That is the best way to work.
Right.
How many people are in the band? And is it the same lineup? Have you had lineup changes in the 25 years?
We have had more lineup changes in the last 25 years than the Yankees in their entire history of being a baseball team, probably. The guys in the band now, we have the same guys for a long time now. Our drummer is Glenn. He's played in bands. Billy Club Sandwich is one of his bands. He's been a friend of ours since he was like a kid. My brother is the guitar player. We have John Franco is our bass player. We've been that unit now for, I would say, at least, 7 years or so. But all the other guys that were in the band at one point or another contribute to the band, continue to contribute. We're all still very good friends. We all still hang out regularly, and they still come to practice and hang out and help us write tunes. So it's very much a collaborative effort, whatever we do. You might catch like an old drummer of the band in the chicken outfit from time to time.
This is insane, man. This is another thing that is always punk rock, man. It's like we just interviewed last week the director of Filmage, the story about the Descendants and all.
Sure. Yes, I saw that on your website. Yeah.
Cool. Well, it's like at the end, like the whole meaning of the movie really is like Descendants all. It's really, even though they're like two different bands and they have like two different singers and then they've had numerous lineup changes, like all these guys are really just one unit, you know? They'll all still contribute, they'll all still write stuff, you know, even though they might not even record on the record, or they might record on the record and not go out and tour, but they're really very much one unit. I think that's like a punk rock thing, man. From that DI...
I always thought the punk rock thing was like you get mad at the guys in your band and then you beat the shit out of each other, or you like constantly stalking one another for those fucking royalty monies or whatever bullshit is going on. I think to be friends with the fellas that are in the band and to maintain that relationship over the course of our lifetimes, that's probably the best achievement or the proudest thing I could gather from the band is the friendships that we have with each other. And sort of the brotherhood that we have, the larger band or the larger group as a whole, like all the other guys, the old singer of the band, Mike, and our old drummer, Vinny, and our old bass player, Scott, and just everybody that's ever contributed to the band is still a very close friend of ours. And that's like the best thing that we could possibly have going.
Actually, you're right. I take everything back. I think that you are an outlier. You're right. I just so happened to be talking with them last week. That's why I put two and two together and put everybody in the same boat. But you know, it's a special thing that you have, the camaraderie and the brotherhood, you know?
For sure. Like, that's the only reason for doing it is really just the other fellas. Like, that's why we keep doing it. I like hanging out with those guys, and we try to get together once a week and do the thing. And that's the most important thing, is to just keep everybody together. That's why I started the band. I wanted to have a way to bring my friends together, doing something that we enjoy doing. We all liked music and 25 years later, we're still together doing it in some capacity.
All right, tell me about the name, No Redeeming Social Value. I love that fucking name. It's great. Who came up with it? What's the story behind it? What's the meaning behind it?
I always give credit to my old buddy, my old college friend, Jim Walsh. He's still a friend of mine, still contributes to the band after all these years. We were, you know, knucklehead teenagers and stuff, and trying to come up with a band, you know, bashing out tunes in my parents' basement, trying to come up with a name. At the time, we were heavily listening to Zappa music, and he came up with this name. He said, man, he's like, you guys, No Redeeming Social Value. That describes what you're doing right here.
Yes.
And that's, you should kind of think in that direction. So, yeah, he came up with the name, and, you know, it's a really long name. People just don't understand that name. Like, you'll get guys coming up to you, hey, No Values, or hey, Redeeming Social this. Like, people have no fucking idea what, how to say it or what it means. And that's cool to me, too. So that's all right. You know, it used to kind of get to me like, man, I don't understand how people that speak the English language can't fucking figure out these four words and put them together. But, yeah, I get it. I see why they can't. I mean, you know, Frank Zappa's not for everyone.
Well, do you ever use the acronym instead?
Oh, yeah, all the time. NRSV. It's.
Do you put it into the New York Hardcore logo? Do you
have yeah, that's on the back of one of our T-shirts, as a matter of fact.
Of course.
You know, the No Redeeming Social Value logo is on the front, and then, like, the New York Hardcore X symbol is on the back with the NRSV replacing the NYHC.
I like your artwork. Is that kind of DIY stuff? Do you do that yourself?
A buddy of mine did this, actually. His name is Jim. He's from a band Influence of ours, Norman Bates and the Showerheads, a local band here from Queens, New York. And he painted this for me. He lived right down the block from me.
Awesome.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you get scared off, or do you not like when people say Long Island? Isn't Queens...
Well, Queens is on Long Island. I don't know if most people know that. And so is Brooklyn. There's no bridge to get from Brooklyn to, like, say, Suffolk County. You fucking drive, like, straight Southern State Parkway, man. You're fucking there, you know?
Exactly.
You live in... you don't live on Long Island. You live in the city. I'm like, well, this is fucking... You know, that's on Long Island. I don't know. People, geographically, they get kind of confused, you know? But
people are idiots.
Yeah, we're... It's all one big thing, a piece of crap floating in the sea over here.
I love you guys, man. You guys are great. What should we play on the show, man? What's a good song to highlight No Redeeming Social Value?
Oh, gosh. I mean,
that's the way I do it. I don't pick the song that I like the most. I always put it on you.
I couldn't tell you the song that I like the most. I honestly couldn't say, but... I mean, being that we're from Long Island, I mean, you know, Your Boyfriend is a Guido is an old classic by ours, written by our old drummer, our first drummer. And we still play that one. And man, that is typical of what the fuck goes on here on a daily basis in Queens and Long Island. You know, we're being taken over by these Guidos, and we got to get them out of our society.
Are you yourself, sir, a Guido?
Never have been, never will be. I don't have the haircut for that, man. I'm going the clean-cut American way here, brother.
Only way to go.
That's right.
But are you part Italian? Do you have any Italian in you or whatever?
No, Queens, man, all the way, baby. That's it. I just... Born and raised, Jamaica, Queens.
Awesome, man. When people reaching out to you, they should look you up on Facebook. Do you have a website?
We have a Facebook page, you know, No Redeeming Social Value. We have a website, nrsv.com, shorten it for the people that, you know, the Guidos that don't speak English. That's where you could find us. You know, all our stuff is up there. We're on iTunes. We're on all the stuff. You know, Dead City Records is our record label, and people can find us over there. They got a lot of great bands, too, and they take care of us. So people can check us out over there, you know?
Awesome, man. This is Your Boyfriend is a Guido by No Redeeming Social Value on Dying Scene Radio.
Go out. Won't you always say no? You don't like me.
Dean from No Redeeming Social Value, coming to you from Queens, New York, on Dying Scene Radio with Bobby Noxious and Bobby Pickles. Don't be a Guido.
Scarhead with DFF, Drink, Fuck, Fight. Before that, we had Your Boyfriend is a Guido by No Redeeming Social Value. Prior to that was our interview with D Thrilla, frontman of That Wholesome Act. And prior to that, we played another song by them, Beer Equals Fun by NRSV as well.
You're playing some good music on this show. I got to start listening on the regular. That's the punk rock and hardcore stuff that I would listen to.
Well, you know, I tell you, man, and nothing against Bob. I love Bob. Bob's a music director. This week, I picked the music, and we got to play politics, man. There's a lot of different genres encompassing punk rock, right?
No doubt.
From funk punk to hardcore punk and everything that's in between, right? So those guys are great, man. They're absolutely hilarious. That dude has they fucking have a chicken as a mascot. They grill up chicken and throw it into the crowd. They do beer baths. I fucking love it, man. Fucking love it.
Well, Jimmy originated the beer bath.
Yes.
You're familiar with No Redeeming Social Value, right?
Yeah, I was just going to say that there's another connection there because I got closer with them through the punk rock scene, through playing with Murphy's Law and Scarhead. But years back, come to find out that Dean, you know, when I was playing with, I think it was Scarhead at the time, he came up to me after the show and said, you know what, you used to play in the band White Trash, right? And I said, yeah. I wasn't sure you knew about that. Because, you know, White Trash is on a little bit of a different scene. Like you said, it's more funk oriented and then punk. So he said, you know, he used to be like, oh, I used to come down and see you guys as like a little kid, and you guys inspired me with we don't really do much of that anymore. We probably should, but our shtick was we used to like throw money in the crowd. We used to like have dollar bills. We get pizza and White Castles, and we throw White Castle hamburgers out and stuff like that. I don't know why we stopped doing that shit. We should have. I guess we were younger and more drunk and having more fun back then. But basically, it was pretty cool for Dean to say that. I was like, damn, you know, I appreciate that he respected me, you know, from the White Trash days, and, you know, even went out of his way to say, like, was somewhat of an influence on, you know, their stage show, which at this point is much more involved than we ever got. And their stage show is phenomenal, and they blow the doors off most bands they play with. But it's a fun show. Great show. The stage antics, like you said, chickens, giant beers walking around, dancing girls. It's like, that's what a show should be. Like, you go to see a show that, you know, I want to see some shit like that. I don't want to see the same bands, like, chunking the same fucking notes, like, you know, in a generic hardcore fashion, like band after band after band. Some of these shows like that, that is just not my thing, you know?
Absolutely. Yeah, I like the shtick bands, man. And I actually, I'm going to write a list. Everybody likes a list. Everybody likes the 10 this, 10 that, right? The 10 top shtick bands, man. I mean, you think about it. They got Gwar. That's a shtick,
that's
right?
Pure shtick. Misfits.
Yeah. Misfits? You think the Misfits?
No
redeeming social value. I don't know if they would they constitute?
It would constitute a shtick.
Yeah, they got a lot of mascots.
I would say.
Dressed up in a suit, running around all over the place.
Yeah.
That sounds like an awesome show.
If you've got a giant chicken and a giant beer running around your show, you're a shtick band.
That sounds like an awesome show, man.
You know, I like their kind of shtick. I have to say, I don't really dig like the Gwar type of shtick. I mean, I was on tour with them like a couple of times back in the days with Murphy's Law and Scarhead, and that's a little too much. Like, I don't need giant monsters, like, you know, pissing blood on my head and shit at a show. Beers being sprayed and dancing girls running around, that works. Being pissed on by a giant fucking dinosaur monster, that I'll pass on.
I never got into Gwar, really, to be honest with you.
There's so many more. There's a band out in Baltimore called Copstabber. They're fucking great. Great name, by the way, Copstabber.
Yes.
Green Jello, they're the big ones. Pigpen, which is Bob Noxious, my co-host, they don ski masks with protruding pig noses. The Jasons, there's an entire band called The Jasons. Everybody wears Jason Voorhees masks, and they're fucking hilarious. They're like, their station ID's like, you better listen to Dying Seed Radio or you're fucking dead. You know? And they're from Camp Crystal Lake, New Jersey. Do you know
there
what
you
I'm
go.
Saying?
Yeah, I gotcha.
But like I guess Kiss, man, even Kiss, like...
They're the ultimate shtick band.
Yeah.
Shtick bands I like are like, you know, like No Redeeming, you know, the Misfits to an extent, but the other shit like Gwar, like fucking like giant dinosaurs pissing on you, blood on you, or fucking Juggalo masks, like any fucking shit like that, I could pass on that shit. There has to be something more in depth besides the shtick going on. And you know, No Redeeming, Murphy's Law, they have little shtick with depth, you know?
Yeah.
Shtick with depth.
Tell us about the Scarhead tune we just came out of, DFF. That's not a new song. I threw it in the playlist so that listeners could get a nice roundabout feel for your work. You know, now...
Appreciate that, yep.
I didn't see you in the video for the song, though, but you played on it. Isn't that correct?
Yes, I actually wrote the music for that one. Not the lyrics. That's Ezek with the lyrics. But I wrote a few of the tracks for the... basically, since, like, Kings of Crime. I recorded on the record, too. But, yeah, that's another story. You know what? I do kind of move around, you know, musically. I hope I don't get labeled as like a flake and like, you know, I don't think that exists because, like I said, I'm still playing with Jimmy and Murphy's Law and still play with Ezek and Scarhead. And but life dictates its own terms and musically, you know, sometimes you got to follow your heart in like different paths. I've definitely spread myself sometimes maybe a little too thin, you know, for my personal taste. And I never wanted to be like one of those dudes that's like a band rider. Like, you know, some dudes, they play in like a bunch of different bands and next thing they're like climbing their way to the top of like the band ladder. And like, that's definitely not my thing. Any of the groups I played with, I kind of put my heart and soul into and wrote music with and, you know, meant something to me or else I wouldn't have done it. But I probably, you know, have a little bit of that flake label. I probably can be a little bit flaky like that when truth be told. You know, sometimes when it's time for me to move on musically, you know, I've done a few things like that with that record. And even with the Murphy's Law record, like, I'm not even on the album, you know, I don't get a credit on the album, my picture's not on it, but you know what, I know I played on it, I know I wrote for it, and that's, like, kind of enough for me, and it was time to move on for me musically, so it's you know, I guess I do it for the love of it, you know, if it's time for me to split and not stick around, you know, I get off my ass and split, you know?
White Trash, you've been involved in that since day one, correct?
Well, the band broke up for about 10 years, so that also existed with that band. I mean, that's the biggest example, actually, of that scenario for me. I mean, you know, at the whole time, we were kind of all not getting along with Dave, our singer. So the whole band left, and he put out a second album with different band members. One of them, which is the guitar player that played on the last record, Suburban Purgatory. He's a guy that was kind of in our musical, you know, family. So with all these situations, there's never been bad blood or bad feelings, but... career suicide, definitely a little bit. Like, you know, just to put it out there, like White Trash had a $400,000 record. At the time, we had a 2-record deal with Elektra Records. And, you know, I turned that shit down just to fucking move on musically because my heart wasn't in it because we were not, you know, getting along at the time. There's a lot of other reasons. Our management, like, probably should have pulled us together. And, you know, we were young kids. We were like, ah, fuck this. We'll fucking make a record over here. Do it ourselves instead. And that's where I'm at now. You know, I guess we're putting out records, you know, doing it ourselves instead of with labels behind us. But you know what? I could definitely say I look in the mirror. You know, I'm proud of what I've done and who I am. And, you know, of course, you know, it would have been nice to get a $400,000 record advance, you know, 20 years ago. But it didn't work out that way. And crazy as it might sound, I don't know if I'd say I'm glad I did it. But looking back on it, I'm proud of myself for doing it because, you know, it was time to move on. We weren't getting along musically. We probably, you know, couldn't have written, you know, co-created together the way that we are, like, you know, 15 years down the road. So, you know, that's just the way life worked out. You know, now we're back together without a big label, without a big budget, you know, making records on our own, like sharing files back and forth within the band. And in a way, it's kind of bonded the remaining members of the band back together, which is on a friendship level and on a real life level is kind of the most important thing. So definitely that's my home base. That's where I grew up, you know, writing. And we, like I said, we all went to school. We were all like best buddies in high school. So, you know, it goes back a long way. That's really where my history is with White Trash, you know?
Absolutely. That Scarhead song, you said you wrote that song.
You
wrote the music for it.
Yeah. Actually, originally wrote that riff for Jimmy when we were recording the Party's Over record. So that was almost a Murphy's Law song. And in all actuality, that was intended to be a Murphy's Law song. Probably nobody out there will ever know that. Well, maybe they will now. But
I didn't know that.
Yeah, they had enough songs for the record. And, you know, we didn't end up recording it. When we started doing that Scarhead record, you know, Isaac, you know, asked me for some material. And I said, hey, I wrote this song for Murphy's Law back in the days. Take a listen. And he was like, yeah, let's use that, you know. And then became Drink, Fuck, Fight.
Now, why is it Drink, Then Fuck, Then Fight? Shouldn't it be Drink, Then Fight, Then Fuck? Isn't most of the aggression out of a person after sex? I mean, you drink and then fuck. And then fight afterwards.
I think with Isaac, who wrote the lyrics, the all three probably could go in any order. The song could have been FFD, FDD, DFD. I think he values all of them pretty much equally.
Cool.
But I don't want to speak on his behalf. Those are his lyrics.
So just going into some more news, man, with the announcements for the 2015 Emmy Awards, came word that True Trans with Laura Jane Grace, the 10-part AOL documentary series chronicling the Against Me front woman's struggle with coming out as a woman, has been nominated for News and Documentary Emmy and the New Approaches Arts, Lifestyle, Culture category. It's pretty nice how we were talking from one thing and then we just go right in that one. It's the antithesis of it.
Trannies.
The actual awards themselves will air live on ABC on September 20th, so stay tuned. I actually watched this entire series last night. You know, as preparation, I'm doing the news here, so I, you know.
Preparation
anyway,
my ass.
If you haven't seen it, you can find the link for it online on dieandscene.com. Tone, you're currently transitioning into a human being, which is a step up from you. How does it feel not being a cockroach?
Well, you could tell me how it feels to be an amoeba.
Maybe we could transition both our mohawks into one head of hair.
That is a possibility.
How about some more music, fellas? This track right here is from the UK punk act Science Made Us Robots, who have recently released their newest album, Paper Bones, and have made the entire album available to download. And you can find the link for that on dieandscene.com. The band's most recent release, Rats and Swans, was released last year. This is Science Made Us Robots with their track Hopeless Attitude on Dying Scene Radio.
Give my heart and my soul to the blues. When I take my last drink and the bird can Jason V?
Yo, this is Jason 3D, and we're the fucking Jasons from Camp Crystal Lake. Listen to Dying Scene Radio, or you're fucking dead.
Punk band Spinoff, who have just released their newest work since their 2011 debut EP, Making Friends. The new album is entitled Olds Cool. Not Old School, Olds Cool. Okay? And it was just released a couple weeks ago or whatever. But the band has made the entire album available to stream, and you can find the link for that on dyingscene.com, of course. Hey, Aaron, where can we find this new White Trash record? So you said it's available for streaming, so Reverb Nation, and then whitetrashuniverse.com.
Yep, it's all one word. And then it'll also be available on my production company's site, which is being updated at the moment, and that's GothamGoldMusic.com.
Now, this guy, he's White Trash, so he understands why I'm asking this. Now, how did you come up with the name White Trash?
That was back in the days. We used to perform as... this is another crazy little tidbit. The original drummer at the time, it was always me, my brother on guitar, and Dave, our singer. We were kind of like the core members. We grew up across the street from each other, and we went through, you know, a bunch of different drummers. One of the original
Where in Queens?
It was Fresh Meadows, Queens, a little area in between Flushing and Jamaica. A little apartment complex over there we all grew up in. And one of the very first drummers was Goat, who's now playing with the Misfits now. Just a crazy little side note. So he's been, you know, my boy from like junior high school for years. But we were playing as Wired, It's funny, even with little kids, I don't know why we, you know, we call ourselves Wired back then, but it was, the name was Wired for a while, and at one point we just switched it to White Trash. I believe Dave's father was the one who originally came up with the name, and we just liked it. We were like beer drinking kids, and we thought, you know, although we weren't like hillbillies, you know, we were kind of like Queens White Trash, so it kind of fit us.
Honestly, it fits me more. I'm from Florida, so it definitely does. And also Bob as well. I'll go ahead. Even though he's not here, he's here with us in spirit. And I'll go ahead and lump him under that category also.
I think we could all qualify for White Trash category.
The last piece of news I have, it really isn't news at all. It's just a campaign, I guess. It's called Pass the Bass. Aaron, you're a super talented bass player, man. So
thank you, bro.
And you are, too. You know, you slap the bass, right?
I slap the bass.
Funky, you get funky with it, man, right?
I slap the bass.
You do slap the bass, man. You know, and you know exactly what I'm talking about. That
I slap that shit like my bitch. Nah, just kidding. I grew, you know what? I really don't know where that came from. I think it's from, I would have to probably credit, you know what? My brother, who's, again, the original guitar player for White Trash, he grew up playing drums in the house. We grew up in like a musical family. My parents were like folk, artsy, like folk singers. They played like coffee houses, like acoustic, you know, Arlo Guthrie type, like Joan Baez type shit. So we grew up with...
very interesting, very interesting.
Yeah, we grew up with like, you know, guitars and a piano in the house. So, you know, we wanted to like beat on some shit. So my brother got a drum set. And then my parents made me take like classical piano lessons when I was like 5 years old. And like by the age of like 9 or 10, my brother had switched from drums to guitar. He was the older one. He's 5 years older than me. And he was like, why don't you get a, you know, pick up a bass? And, you know, we plugged in and he was like, let's fucking start a rock band. We were listening to like, you know, metal at the time. We were like, fuck yeah, fuck this shit. Fuck the classical music. Let's fucking plug in and play some live shit. And for some reason, I just started like, you know, playing like that. Like, I guess I've always been interested in funk music and later on I got into it. But I don't know. I, you know, I don't know if he showed me some like, you know, slapping or whatever. But either way, I grew up playing like that. And then in high school, I played until I got kicked out. I played in the jazz band for a second, and the jazz band teacher was a really cool dude. He had us like playing like some Herbie Hancock shit, like some funk bass shit. And he had these ringers. We were close to Jamaica, so he had like these like old school like dudes that had like graduated like high school already. But he had them come in like play with the jazz band. Like they were like pretty much straight up ringers. I don't know how he got them to come down and play, but they were like solid jazz cats that like played trumpet and sax. So we kind of, you know, vibed a little bit together, and I always kind of dug that music, which is why I joined the jazz band in like high school or whatever. That was like my extracurricular, you know, activity and shit. So I did a lot of funk and like jazz slap bass playing through that dude. He kind of put me onto it, and I guess it kind of stuck, you know, after that.
Well, the onion, you can keep on peeling it with White Owl, right?
Yes.
But this piece, speaking of the talented bass playing and all that stuff, I just figured you'd be interested in this story right here. And if people are interested in this, they can check out facebook.com/passthebassdylan. It's a page that has been set up to help spread the word about Dylan Flynn, a 30-year-old from Columbus, Ohio, who started playing the bass when he was 15 years old. Basically, the long and short of it is that Dylan was in a serious auto accident, which significantly impacted him neurologically, making playing his bass more than just a struggle. So dealing with traumatic brain injury and not being able to play his bass guitar, Dylan has made it a goal to get his favorite bassists to play and sign his bass guitar. It was made to be played. I want to get some use out of it and can think of no better way, says Dylan, who has so far been able to get Joe Ginsberg, bassist of Chuck Reagan's band, and Chris Barker with Anti-Flag, to both generously help him out. Nathan Maxwell of Flogging Molly has confirmed that he will be playing Dylan's bass when they come to Columbus in June. Dylan says he's keeping his fingers crossed for an opportunity to get Dan Adriano of Alkaline Trio to play it, who Dylan admits is his favorite bassist, and also Fat Mike of NOFX. If anybody out there can help Dylan out, let's pass the word along about his campaign, facebook.com/passthebassdylan. He's a big fan of Millencolin, The Offspring, Dropkick Murphys, Rise Against, Greg Hensley with Diesel Boy, who unfortunately is no longer with the band, but who Dylan feels is still damn impressive, Matt Freeman from Rancid, and Gavin Caswell from Census Fail. He says, amazing bassist as well. Well, we just so happen to be talking to an amazing bassist right now, man, Aaron White Owl. You know, like we were just saying, you know, about how you grew up. That's amazing. about your folk singing parents who got you into playing classical piano. You know, what do you think about this campaign, man? The traumatic brain injury rendering him unable to play his bass.
Yeah, first of all,
that would totally suck, huh?
That would totally suck.
First of all, much respect and my heartfelt wishes to Dylan. If you want to send anything over to me on Facebook or something like that, where I could post something up, obviously I would love in any way to help out with that. But that would suck. I have a lot to say, but when it comes to shit like that, I'm pretty much speechless, man. I'm sorry to hear that, man. Just keep hanging in there, dude.
Yeah. Well, he name dropped a bunch of talented bassists right there. Do you look up to? Who do you look up to as a bassist?
You know what? It's pretty funny. Matt Freeman's one of the guys you mentioned. That's definitely a great player. Flea from the Red Hot Chili Peppers, of course. I kind of grew up I would have to say, honestly, that maybe the way I just described, playing through those jazz band stuff, I kind of just more important to me is songwriting and being creative with it. So more of my love for music comes out through through writing and creating, not so much playing the bass. But I look up to a whole ton of players. I'd probably say Flea is the one that most similar to grew up play similar to it.
How did I know he was gonna say Flea?
Yeah.
Flea's a man.
But yeah, bass playing to me isn't even though it's my gig, when I listen to a band, the bass player could suck, and as long as the music is good, then I respect and appreciate it,
Exactly. Yeah, but the bass is just that extra thing on top, right? I mean, I love the bass guitar, bro. I actually played bass when I was young. That's what I played. So.
I'm definitely not a music geek like that. I appreciate any great players, but I'm not to me, I'll take a good song over a good bass solo or something like that.
Yeah, man. But to back it up, it just fills up the music,
No doubt. No doubt.
Hey, will you take us out, you think? You think you could introduce the next song?
All right. We're going to go out with this track right here from South Coast UK metal punk act Almeida, who's streaming their brand new EP Social Media Circus in its entirety on DyingScene.com. The album was released last weekend through Lockjaw Records. This is Almeida with Payday on Dying Scene Radio.
From Cock Sparrow, I'm with Daryl.
Oi, oi, this is Cock Sparrow. Listen to Dying Scene, you cunts.
Behave yourselves. Have fun. Cheers now.